My kind of reveille. I like it. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and welcome to the program this morning. Very nice to have you with us. I hope you had a lovely whatever. I hope you had a lovely Christmas, a lovely Hanukkah, a lovely St. Stephen's Day, a lovely Boxing Day. For agnostics and atheists, I hope you had a lovely Saturday and Sunday. I hope you had a lovely time. We did, and I'm speaking for the group. Did everyone have a nice time?
Yes, yeah. We did.
I'm just talking by who I followed on Facebook of what. Rosemary did a lot of grandchild action.
Yep.
I did. Gemma's out there. She's supposed to be listening to me now. Hello, Gemma. Go play Peppa Pig. I'll be home soon.
I just have to say, well, besides that your granddaughter is adorable,
yes.
I do have to say that you are an adorable grandmother.
Oh, that makes my day.
I would want my grandmother, who did not have the benefit of social media in the 70s, to be able to write all that good stuff about me. So, Alan, did you have a lovely lovely time?
Wonderful.
Did you have your grandchild fixed, too?
No, is here, 2.5. It's like you wound him up and you wound him up and he does not stop until he goes to sleep. does not stop.
Takes after his grandfather.
Oh no. His grandfather likes to take a nap. Like grandfather likes to take a nap now.
Well, Pat Cooney and I were talking about this morning, but yesterday, like, the greatest present of all was I got to take a nap yesterday. And it's like that was
true.
Awesome.
No, there's nothing like a nap.
Yeah, it was really
kids
great.
Fight it, and it's the best gift.
But it is.
Yeah, but Mamie Eisenhower, she said the secret to life was a nap every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, now, there's a lot of research on that. There's a guy at Cornell who's written a book about it. Just a power nap is what they call it.
There is the guy at Cornell is what they call the sleep course. I send my money and my kids to Cornell.
Sure.
And he taught to sleep.
My money and my kids. Yeah.
I have one of those too.
Right.
Cornelians, they call them.
Right. And this guy teaches the sleep course, which is the most popular course at Cornell, and everybody has to take it.
I want to introduce everybody. I just want to go around I just want to go around the bend here because we're getting some hiss on a microphone. So take Alan's out of the equation and see if that what that does. We're just going to do a little testing on the air. Take Alan's out. All right, that one. So we still have the hiss, right? So now Rosemary. It's Rosemary's microphone. Okay, so we're going to have Rosemary use
this
number
microphone.
Three instead.
This will be your baby.
Yes.
Hello.
Well, I hope you love it. All
I'm
right.
Not hissing.
My apologies to the audience for having to go through that, but I think it's better than hearing a hiss. So, thank you very much for that diagnostic test on the air. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Arameo, who is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany, is here. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Mike, you know anything exciting over the holiday?
Well, we had 5 of the 7 grandchildren around.
You had a damn near a team.
Some sauce.
Three are still with us.
And how old are they?
They range in age from 3 up to 12.
Wow.
Oh, that's a great span.
Terrific group.
Well, good for you.
And a lot of fun. And a nap would be nice, but didn't happen.
Well, you got an hour and a half here, Mike.
Right, good, okay. No, we're putting other people to sleep, Joe.
Well, good morning and welcome. It's very nice to have you with us. We miss being with you. It was nice to have the time off, but it's nice to be back, and we've got a lot to talk about, so we will do just that. Now it's just sort of one of the things of like, well, okay, but where do you begin? And I thought where we would begin is over the war of words between President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump. President Obama was talking to his friend and former colleague, David Axelrod, in a podcast and said that if he had run for a third term, he felt that he would have won and that he would have been able to bring out the vote and defeat Donald Trump. That went over very well with everyone except for Donald Trump.
Well, you know, look, Joe, as I've said before, you don't get to run for a third term. So
right.
The whole thing is just silly. The Constitution's quite clear on that now. We have an amendment that says you can't do it. I think he would have beaten the stuffing out of Trump. And here's why. Because I think that he is a man who people want to vote for. They like him positively. I think Hillary had a problem. I know, Rosemary, you're a fierce adherent for Hillary, but I think that there was a real sense of, you know, we want to vote against Trump, and people did, and they voted for Hillary, and she won, what, almost 3 million votes more now. But Obama is somebody who had a sense of positivity going for him, and that's something I don't think Hillary universally enjoyed.
Okay, my reaction to the story. A, it's one of these non-stories that we shouldn't even be talking
about.
A, I could beat you. No, you can't. Yes, I could. You know, two little boys, I hate it. And B, there's a really interesting column by Roger Cohen today talking about how that coolness and that that unemotional, no drama Obama approach is possibly what set up Trump, because he's passionate. If nothing else, he has deep feelings and he speaks strongly, and you know he cares. You don't really know that about Obama. And he, in fact, rather than could have beat Trump himself, may have helped to set up Trump's winning.
Well, the other thing that could be said...
I'd like to register to answer Rosemary when you get a chance.
Well, okay. Well, you can probably. I just want to set this up, which is when you think about how hard he worked on behalf of the Clinton campaign in very important states. I mean, he spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania, for example,
and North Carolina.
And yes, he wasn't running, but he was making the case for continuing his programs, and that did not work out. So
it's more complicated than that, though. I think that Trump was able to vilify Hillary, and there were lots of things in her past that gave him, made that easy for him. And if he were running against Obama, if, you know, it was the second term of Obama and he was running against him and he used the same tactics, he would have vilified Obama. And it's complete. I agree, Rosemary. It's completely speculative. It has nothing to do with reality. And I kind of think that, you know, Trump answered it with a tweet saying, no way.
ISIS, Obamacare.
Yeah, right. ISIS, Obamacare. Right. But in a more, much more subtle way, which is the style that that you're referencing, Rosemary, that Obama uses, he's really digging at Trump. I think when he tells David Axelrod in an interview that I would have won if I were running against him, he knows that Trump is going to hear that. It's going to drive him crazy. It's just a way to needle him.
That vote in the UN did the same thing. A meaningless
vote. Well,
that
was more important than this.
Well, except that it basically is meaningless because in another month he isn't going to be there, and we already know the policy is changing radically. But it certainly did get under his skin.
Mm-hmm. I think in a much more subtle way, instead of using a tweet and doing it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
So I want to get to that issue, but Alan did ask to be registered.
But, and then I changed my mind about what I wanted to talk
about.
Oh, okay,
that's fine.
But here's what. I truly think that he knew Obama and Michelle and probably Axelrod, they knew they were really up against it here. I think they knew it. I remember Deval Patrick talking to me about, his replacement as governor, and he said, if we can get her through. I think these guys poll. I think they know, and I think they knew. And that's why Michelle Obama. And by the way, here's what I'm thinking. Even though everybody in this room is going to yell at me and everybody on the other side of the radio, you want to win the next election? Michelle Obama is the person, and you apply.
Let's yell at him.
And you beg her, and you make it her patriotic duty. Her numbers are huge. She is the best of the American conscience, and I would love to see her run. And I think she would if she thought it was her duty to do it. But in any case, I think the Obamas knew that Hillary was in real trouble, and that's why they went out and did what they did.
Rosemary.
They weren't very effective at it. Obama also is the one who saved the car industry. And yet he did not connect with car workers, auto workers in Michigan. That vote went to Trump. That falls as much on Obama as it does on Hillary Clinton, that they could not make that
connection.
It
might have helped if they had gone to Michigan to campaign.
And that includes the Obamas.
So let me just...
And I don't want Michelle Obama. I think she's fabulous. I would definitely vote for her. But I'm kind of sick of people who are totally unqualified and inexperienced running for offices, high offices.
Yeah, I disagree. I think they need a new face from a new family that hasn't had anybody in the White House.
Right. That'd be nice. Someone in old Congress or maybe a state house or a governor's office. Someone who knows something about what they have to do.
Name one.
Well, I can't. I've already said I don't think there'll be a woman. If you're talking about anybody, Cory Booker comes to mind. Elizabeth Warren comes to mind.
Too far out, too far left. For Elizabeth Warren, although I think she's the best.
She's actually aging out a little bit.
Yeah,
she's in her late
60s.
I mean, I think you need a new generation.
Okay, so yeah. I'm on record saying who I want.
Yep.
When
okay.
you guys can come up with something better, let me know.
She's a
well,
fabulous
it's four
person,
years.
But,
you know, we'll see what develops, right? I do want to just change this narrative. I want to get into the story about the UN in a moment because Rosemary brought it up, but. If we just change the narrative to, and some have implied this in the coverage of the story between Trump and Obama, of this being a criticism by President Obama in some way of how Hillary ran her campaign, do you see it that way?
Yeah, definitely. She didn't take any bold moves, and that's because all the numbers and her advisors suggested she didn't have to. And that is a safe bet for the first woman to be running. She didn't want to be too bold. But think about it. Had she picked a Cory Booker or Elizabeth Warren as a running mate, I'd take a bold step. If she had stopped all the news conferences after Comey came out on Halloween with that horrible announcement and said, look, let's settle this once and for all. Let's talk about the things that really matter here. Look at what happened instead. She lost. She might have turned it around. She never did. Right, which is this whole stupid story I would have won if I ran. Blah.
What if? There's about 20 things that she could have done that might have made a difference, but it didn't happen.
Okay, so here's an idea. Maybe you guys won't like this one either.
Yeah.
Here's Comey. Going down in history, really, is a guy who...
Spoiler?
Spoiled his election. He's got to go home every night, his tail between his legs, people saying, oh, look at him, you know, one or two. Now, what if, Rosemary R. Mayo, as you look at me through those eyes of yours, and you're expecting...
You want me to look at you through my nose?
You're expecting something bad, aren't you? What if Comey decides the one way to resurrect himself... In life, in terms of his reputation, in terms of what people are saying, is to come up with something criminal on Trump.
Well, he may have to.
How do you figure?
It may just happen.
How do you figure?
Because there just may be something that has happened or will happen that will...
In the service of his job.
In the service... As the FBI director, he'll have no choice but to bring it to light. I mean, there's certainly...
People have choices all the time.
Oh,
and I think in
well,
all
some
due
may land on his doorstep that he can't ignore. Is what
I think in all due respect to you, Mike, and you know there's nobody in this world I respect more than you.
It's coming, Mike. Get ready.
I truly believe... that these guys have political decisions to make and personal decisions to make. And what will that make them look like? So I don't think it is that there's a violation of a law and therefore the FBI goes and investigates it. I think every day they have to decide which law got broken. What are they going to do? You know, I don't think
Comey feels bad. What is that?
Bad.
Yeah, turn those headphones down there and that knob right there. Thank you.
How's
okay.
That better?
That's much better. Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I don't think Comey feels bad at all. I think that he is one of these self-righteous maybe is too strong, but a self-righteous guy who thinks, I did what I had to, even though it was immensely unpopular, and history will stand by me, and I would do it all again tomorrow. I think that's exactly how he feels. And the immensity of what he has brought on the country, I don't think affects him at all.
Well, we'll never really know unless
he'll write a book,
writes
Alan.
A memoir.
Don't you think he'll write a book?
And he'll
Joe
say what, and he'll say what Rosemary and he'll say what Rosemary said. However, you know, to me, he had the look of going back and forth of a sort of pathetic and very neurotic individual.
He'll write a book, I think. Don't you think?
I don't know.
If a guy in a black suit shows up at my door today, I'm going to know why.
Pathetic and neurotic. Hmm.
The back and forth of it, you know.
Yeah.
We don't have reason. The prosecutor, and just a few days to go.
But that was only one of the many things that, had it not happened or had it been handled differently.
It's one of the big ones.
Could have been,
even Nate Silver came out and looked at the numbers are pretty devastating.
Nate Silver.
Nate Silver. Well, he didn't have it that far off.
He just didn't.
Well, let me put it this way. It didn't matter that the day before the election, it was still 87%.
Yeah, we use those numbers the wrong way. That's the problem.
Right. That's not an 87% of the electorate were planning to vote for Hillary Clinton. That was a chance. It was like hitting a field goal from the, 48-yard line or something.
Right.
It happens. It's just unlikely.
But it was also based on polling, which wasn't accurate.
Could I only say...
It was close, though.
Say nonsense?
No. There were dozens of polls that were within 2 or 3 points, which is the margin of error, and they called it wrong.
Okay, that's right, but they still got the states wrong. They did get the states wrong because in that they were saying that Hillary was going to win North Carolina, was going to win Pennsylvania, was going to win Wisconsin, was going to win Michigan.
Based on very close margins, and those were bad calls based on accurate data.
Right. And so they were basing the race on the Electoral College, which ultimately prevailed in this case.
Right.
The fault is the journalists, including ours. We sat here every day and talked
about
the
polls. 86%.
Every day.
This is done. This is over. You know, Trump's gone.
That's what you said, but not what I said.
No, I know.
Oh,
Alan.
you are the biggest lover of polls on this panel, Alan.
You can say it could go the other way. I'm worried that it's going to go the other way. Weren't those your words, Alan?
That and a lot more.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so
history gets rewritten.
Cake and eat it too.
President-elect Donald Trump thrust himself into one of the world's most polarizing debates on Thursday by pressuring President Obama to veto a UN resolution critical of Israel, the newly elected leader's most direct intervention in foreign policy during his transition to power. You alluded to it earlier. Your concern about this is?
Well, there have been 70 of these votes where the international community represented by the UN has tried to condemn Israeli movement into land that has been traditionally Palestinian and could be again if we ever came up with a two-state solution that everyone would agree to. And for the first time ever, the U.S. as a superpower did not veto it. They just set it out. They abstained. And so the vote went through, which means that nothing really. It means what we already knew, that most of the international community thinks Israel has been wrong to move into East Jerusalem and into other parts of traditionally Palestinian land. And the response to this has been outrage from both Netanyahu and Israel and from Donald Trump, who was in a position to hugely reverse the whole system in just a month when he comes into office. He's already appointed his bankruptcy lawyer to be the ambassador, and the ambassador is in favor of settlements.
We're going to pause there. We'll be back and take a break with some news, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the panel. And we had a very good break because we were talking about all the things we want to talk about. So now we'll actually get to them and talk about them. We welcome your letters as well. Panel. I don't know if I ever invited people to write PANEL panel at WAMC.org, which is a very nice way of getting our attention. It's a very nice way of telling us what is on your mind. It's nicer than accosting me in the grocery store, for example.
Has that happened to you?
Just, it sounds like it has very recently.
Just, you know, like you're at the end of the aisle. I just want to get to the elbow macaroni. That's all I want to do is get from the end of the aisle to the elbow macaroni. And the and a guy comes up and just, and then the first words out of his mouth are, you know, you really have to do something about that round top panel. And I said, what do I have to do about the round? And by the way, that's not a great opener.
No.
That's not a great opener. Yeah. That's not like a happy holidays. That's no.
Yeah.
So that immediately puts you on the defensive.
So what did you do?
Well, I mean, he was his whole thing, you know, he's a panelist he likes, panelist he doesn't like, his person should be on more, his person should be on less, blah, 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 blah. That's all fine.
So should we ask him? Who does he not like?
No,
let's
I'm
not get into that.
I should say, though, that the offending parties are not here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so
we've seen it. No, never mind.
So, and if they were here, I'd probably still tell you they're
same
not here.
There, yeah.
But and so yeah, I said, oh, great, and you know that's why we have letters when you write, and we have a comment line, and you know yeah, I nice need my macaroni.
Nice to see you.
Right.
Well, you're a gentleman. You are a gentleman.
I kind of lost my cool though, Alan.
How so?
Well, I just you know
did
I,
you
I
punch
was,
him?
I feel I was no, I didn't punch. I didn't. I no. I guess it wasn't that.
Did you do what I did the other day?
Say throw the first punch.
Yeah, take a first shot. Go ahead, take a first shot.
No, but
Roosevelt
I did
that
feel
was
like
immature.
I was. It did not put me in the holiday spirit. Anyway, so we love your letters because those we can read and delete.
Well.
We have letters. Let's listen. Let's read some of those now.
Okay, here comes James, who says Ronald Reagan is the only president to cut aid to Israel, and it was over their illegal settlement building. President Obama has finally acted over the same issue. Netanyahu is biting one hand that feeds him and is marshaling his, quote, American allies to attack President Obama. Time to fight to reduce funding to Israel and create greater separation, even as Netanyahu's fellow racist becomes president.
Agree. We've become more right to the right of Netanyahu, which is, or we will under Trump, and that is frightening. And it will cause more instability in a region already unstable.
Well, you know, I have some agreement with you. I certainly agree that the settlements are a slap in the face.
They're provocative.
Terrible slap in the face. On the other hand, I really am, and I was raised that way, I admit this to you, a fierce adherent to the concept of the State of Israel. And while there are people who don't agree with me about that, that's how I feel.
Well, I don't think that's in dispute. A two-state solution still recognizes Israel's
yeah,
right to exist.
Right. I agree. Roundtable, please stop rehashing the election. Remember,
agree.
Hillary actually won.
Good point. Well,
yes, Dems need to find a better candidate going forward. Let's discuss how to get rid of the Electoral College, and that's from Judith. And then Daisy says, Tammy Duckworth, president, and she mm-hmm. has experience.
As possible presidential
yeah.
material.
Yeah. Kathy says, I think someone like Kirsten Gillibrand would be a future candidate. That's what we have so far, folks.
All right.
And it's up to you to do more.
Okay.
And better.
Oh, right down the gauntlet. All right. Who wants to talk about Carl Palladino? Oh, my God.
Wow.
What the hell happened there? Just in case you missed the story over the holiday, former New York gubernatorial candidate Carl Palladino, facing backlash on social media for a racist remark about the First Lady, published Thursday in a Buffalo Alt Weekly publication. Palladino, who was honorary co-chair of President-elect Donald Trump's New York campaign, was one of a dozen prominent Buffalo figures surveyed by Art Voice for an end-of-the-year feature on their hopes for 2017. And in response to a question about who should go away, Palladino suggested the First Lady should return to being a male and move to an Jeez. African cave. These are all quotes, by the way. I'd like Michelle Obama to return to being a male and let loose in the outback of Zimbabwe, where she lives comfortably in a cave with Maxie the gorilla, Palladino responded, according to Art Voice. Buffalo developer and member of the city's school board, Palladino won a 2010 Republican primary for governor, defeating ex-U.S. Representative Rick Lazio by running a campaign that lambasted political correctness. Palladino's remarks drew immediate backlash from officials and many social media users, including his own son, I believe, in Western New York, some of whom called on him to give up his school board seat, which seems to be the least of our worries, but there you go.
Would you want your son or daughter going to a school where he was in charge of...
Well, no, he's but not I think in charge. He's in the minority for sure on that board.
Instead, Palladino doubled down, claiming the remarks were meant to be humorous and had nothing to do with race, despite the references to the African country and Michelle Obama, an African American. His lengthy 527-word statement referred to President Barack Obama as a lazy-ass president while criticizing him for everything from his handling of... everything from his handling of the Syrian conflict to his treatment of the military to his opposition to Trump's presidential campaign. And yes, it's about a little deprecating humor which America lost for a long time, Palladino said of his response. Merry Christmas and tough luck if you don't like my answer.
Well, the kid who runs the company now criticized his father. It was quite a deep criticism, and the father said, well, I believe he did the right thing to criticize me, which is pretty interesting, isn't it? Here's what's scary about this. This guy ran for governor of the state. He ran for governor of New York.
On the Republican Party. It wasn't some fringe party. It was the Republican Party.
Number one. And number two, have you all noticed that what's happening is that Trump by the way, I think the Republican National Committee or a group like that did say it was wrong, but not Trump.
Yeah, that's I did not upsetting. Hear
right. He was silent on it, but his transition committee did denounce it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So now you wonder what's going on here. Is it the fact that Trump has now unleashed just his very presence, all of this negativity, all of this scandalous kind of talk, all this bullying that you see all over the place? It's what we expected, folks, and it's what we're getting.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's important to remember that Donald Trump, that Palladino had urged Donald Trump to run in 2010, the year that he was that Palladino became the candidate, and Trump came to Albany and appeared at some rally and kind of gave his blessing to Carl Palladino, and then got on a helicopter and kind of went over the plaza and everybody saluted it. It was kind of a surreal situation, and Palladino. When it first happened, we were all astounded, around the newsroom. And there was some speculation maybe he was intoxicated when he made these comments. But these were written answers to a survey to an alt-weekly newspaper in the Buffalo area. Then the Buffalo News contacted him, and he completely repeated them and defended them just as you had said, Joe. And for me, the embarrassing part is that he and I went to the same college. We both attended and graduated from St. Bonaventure University. In fact, I think there's a dorm there named after Palladino Hall, because he gave some money to the college. But
I say right now that'd be renamed the Mike Spain Hall.
Right. Well, I'm not going to give him that kind of money. He's a billionaire. He had a lot of money. And that's nice that he gave it to his alma mater. But the college president on Saturday put out a statement denouncing it. Twitter was full of people denouncing it from St. Bonaventure. And then Dan Barry, the great New York Times columnist and writer who went to St. Bonaventure, put out a tweet quickly that said, I suggest my alma mater, St. Bonaventure, somehow flunk alum Carl Palladino, who clearly missed the Franciscan part. But it is. It's embarrassing. But, even that we're talking about it 4 days later probably gives it more credibility than it needs. What really has to happen is that New York's Republican Party leadership, Ed Cox, the chairman, and the Senate majority leader and other major party figures have to come out and denounce him and give him the boot. He can't have any part of the Republican Party, or they should be ashamed of themselves. That's
well,
what I'm saying.
It's more than just the New York State Party, although I certainly don't disagree with that. This is what Donald Trump has unleashed. He has been confronted with this before and told over and over again, you need to speak out to people who are acting in your name. They invoke you. And he said, no, no, I don't have anything to do with that. I'm shocked and surprised to hear that. That has to stop. Kellyanne Conway should be addressing this. And also, it upsets me that there's no way to remove or take action to remove him from the school board, except to vote him out and when his next term comes up. We need to start codifying traditions and things that we think are rules at both the state and the federal level, I think.
Which, by the way, are being done left and right under a Trump transition team, so why can't it start here?
Exactly.
And I have a question for you, Rosemary. What if this becomes a real issue? He runs the school board again and he wins.
Wow, I know. He just needs his mouth washed out with a great big old bar of soap. It's disgusting. It really, this is horrible.
Well, we saw this in West Virginia. This is very similar to the case that happened in West Virginia of the, what was her position? Was a clerk or a...
She was a mayor of a town.
Mayor of a town.
And she was suspended temporarily. It was reported incorrectly that she was let go, and she was not. And she called Michelle Obama an ape in high heels. How nice that she was going to be replaced with a supermodel, someone elegant. Horrible stuff. Horrible. And it's now acceptable because Donald Trump speaks like that and spoke like that and won the highest office in the land. We the voters, have made this possible.
My point exactly.
Yeah. No, Trump has given license for hate speech.
I want to talk about another aspect of New York State politics when we come back. We'll get a letter or two as well. We'll take a break, and we'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We were talking a little bit about New York State politics because we were talking about Carl Paladino. So let us talk about the man that that won the election against Carl Paladino, and that is Andrew Cuomo, who Casey Siler has an interesting article in the Times Union about the governors moving away from Albany in the sense of the state of the state and other high profile events.
Yeah, Casey did an analysis of the time that Governor Andrew Cuomo has spent in Albany. Now, Albany is a city, it's a place, but it also is a term that refers to state government, you know, and you get a lot of politicians who campaign against Albany, and then they come and apologize to Kathy Sheehan, the mayor of Albany. We don't mean the city, mayor. We just mean the concept of Albany, where state government goes on. Well, the governor who spent 12 years living in the mansion is quite familiar with Albany.
You mean when his father lived here?
When his father was governor, yeah. Governor Mario Cuomo.
Who really did treat that mansion as his own.
He was there all the time. Yeah, he was there all the time. Has spent less and less time since becoming governor here. In 2016, he spent only 48 days here during the first 5 months. After that, his office has not released his schedule, but he's not seen around town, let's put it that way. Mm. And, it'd been a lot higher previous years. Back in 2012, it was 82 days, and it went down 78 days, 54 days, 47 days in 2015. But what it really reflects, and I think this is the analysis here, is that he's taking the message out to the people. He's going to places in Western New York and in the Southern Tier and all around to bring his message, kind of circumventing the Albany press corps, circumventing the whole notion of Albany. And
the legislature who hates him.
Yeah, and it's not... editorial comment there.
there were several members who were going to protest and not show up at the State of the State.
Right. So this is the point of the story. He has announced over the weekend that he is not going to give the traditional State of the State address, but he's going to give several around the state. And he's going to it'll be interesting to see how he tunes it to the different regions that he's in.
Which is what he said he was going to do.
Yeah. If you go to Buffalo, you have a different economic situation than you would the Hudson Valley in the Capital Region in Saratoga, which is doing very well. Or if you go to the Southern Tier or Northern New York, you're going to have different messages. And obviously, you have a much different message if you rely on New York City. I don't know. I mean, is it wrong for a governor to try to be there for more people and go more places?
Well, look, there's a backstory here. Obviously, the big story here is that the legislators wanted a pay raise. Cuomo, in order to get out from under what is a very embarrassing mess with his two closest aides, or one of them, his so-called brother, and who are about to go on trial, needed to do an ethics bill. And he needed something really dramatic. And he gave them a deal. We'll give you the pay raise. You give us an ethics bill which limits the amount of money you can make on the outside. They didn't want to do that, period. So now they're really, really angry because you have to raise your salary if the legislature, right, Mike?
Right. You have to do it before the next term. You can't raise your current salary. You have to do it before you start another term.
Right.
So they have to do it by January 1st.
So they're really angry with him. Now, I've not always been a Cuomo fan, I'll be honest with you. But I do believe he's right on this issue. That's what they do. When Boss Hastie, the Assembly Speaker, and John J. Flanagan, the Senate leader, announce that we don't deal, we don't make deals, we don't trade things. Come on, will you please?
That's the practice of government.
Strains every bit of credibility anybody has. Yeah. So now he's going to go around and he's going to give these speeches in these other places. His problem is that no matter what he does, he can't seem to do well in upstate New York.
That was proven during the last primary in 2014, Democratic primary, where Zephyr Teachout, fairly unknown heading into that race.
Absolutely unknown, really.
Yeah, really. Was able to win all over upstate New York, which was embarrassing.
The state reflects what we've seen in the last election. There is a really big, big divide between the urban areas and the more rural and isolated areas, such as upstate New York.
Mm-hmm. And it really does make sense. I mean, wouldn't you want to reach out and physically be there and reach out to different areas of the state?
But isn't that
Albany's my hometown? I head for New York City every chance I get.
But my question is, this is a diagnostic question. I apologize if it's too in the weeds, but. So the whole point of the state, though, is to go before the legislature.
Good point, Joe.
To go before the state, both the assembly and the Senate. Well, you're not going to do that this time. Or are they then required of those members who cover that area to go to whatever speech he's giving?
There's no requirement like that.
Right. So
there's not even a requirement.
That's outdated.
No, I know.
There's not even a requirement he gives a state of the state.
That's right.
You can do it by mail, too. You can just, the social media and you don't have to
phone it in.
So how are we? I mean, I know on WAMC, we have always traditionally covered the state of the state. We run it live. We have a Vox Pop after it. So, I mean, how do we now cover that if you have six of these things? And are they going to have the official capacity of a state of the state, or is it more of a state of this district, of this region?
I don't think we do, to be honest with you. And this is Alan speaking now. I don't think we do. I think we have every obligation to cover it and to play it if it's a real state of the state message, because it does go to the legislature. Remember, this is a guy who was so anti-legislature all along that what he did was to move the state of the state away from the state capitol, where it had always been given, and into this humongous hall down at the
Empire Center.
And that was one more shot. You'll remember that, and it's so interesting, there was a guy who yelled out, remember that? He yelled out, "You're a liar."
Was that Cuomo? I thought that was Barack Obama.
No. It was Cuomo.
There's been some heckling from the crowd.
Anyway, so now he's taking it away from the Great Hall, and he's moving it to these places. I don't think he deserves six coverings for what he's doing.
But what he'll expect is that the local media in each region will then go cover it, and he'll get to tailor it. What I'd like to see is a good analysis of the differences between all six and how he tailors it, and to certainly call him out if he's giving a different message.
And will we have an agenda then that comes out of that? I mean, it would take an analysis of all of those to figure out what the agenda is, and then how that figures in to the budget address, which used to be a couple of days later, or is this going to now be part of that as well?
That's such a good question, because what he's done is to combine the budget address with the state of the state.
Which is what he did last year.
Right.
And now, is that going to be a document that gets presented here in Albany? It's sure. diluting the message in a way that services him, but does it serve the process?
And no lesser person than George Washington, as you may remember, Mike, you and I being the oldest guy.
Yes,
in the
right,
room.
Right.
no lesser person than George Washington was maltreated by the Senate when he went up there to testify to them and said, "I'm never coming up here again."
thanks to our news director, Ian Pickus, who reminds us it was New York City Assemblyman Charles Barron who heckled.
That's right. Yeah, Charlie Baron.
Cuomo last week.
Yeah, but Mario Cuomo was heckled too. You know, all governors.
Governor Pataki, sure. Yeah, they've all been. Yeah. Yes, that's par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you have letters, sir?
Yeah, a couple of letters.
Okay, great. Let's do those.
I think we have a couple of letters here. All right. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Oh, we have a couple more. Yeah, there you go. No.
Jennifer says, "Can someone please clarify for me the distinction between political correctness and politeness, courtesy, respect?" Well, what he's saying, really, in not such disguised code, is in the old days we used to be able to tell racist jokes. We used to tell misogynistic jokes. That's what he's saying.
And this is
disappeared now, is what Palladino was basically saying. You don't really need a magnifying glass to figure that one out, mm-hmm. right? Okay. And a good point, Jennifer. And then we heard from Peter. "It was reported this morning that there was a lot of violence at more than a dozen shopping malls around the country yesterday. This was not customers fighting over bargains, but rather young people engaging in fights, some of which were announced ahead of time. Is this the new America?" Peter, anybody?
Well,
you know, Chicago this week, and there were terrible numbers.
It was a very deadly weekend in Chicago.
Right. And it may well be that one could draw a line from the sort of Trump anger that he keeps expressing with these kinds of fights. Or it may be at some point, right, that these fights go on and he says, "Oh, well, we can't have these fights. In come the police and the military."
You know, I'm not dismissing the story, but it does seem like a slow news day kind of analysis of...
Young people have always fought.
We've been stupid in malls fighting over things, and I don't know. I don't want to dismiss it completely.
And I think it's
maybe something
unrelated
to
the murder upswing in Chicago. That's got lots of problems in that city, and relations between the police and the citizens there are also an issue.
All right, we're gonna pause there because Ray Graff is waiting patiently for.
He's a very patient man.
Yeah, I know he is. He is the epitome of patience, and there he sits, ready to give us a newscast. So we will yield our time to him, and we'll be back after a break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, the 27th of December. Alan Chartok is with us, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a stack of letters in front of him. He'll read those now. We'll get to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
All right, Joe. Thank you. "Why is it upsetting about Palladino? This is predictable byproduct of Trump. It will just keep coming at us. Those Republicans who come out and censure him are just hitting the small targets. Rosemary is exactly right. Where were they when?"
What was the first line of that?
"Why is it upsetting about Palladino?"
Well, I hope it's always upsetting, right?
I would say so.
Don't you?
It's more
like,
why is it surprising?
I think that's the real I mean, it should always be upsetting.
That was the word she used, she said. Okay. David said, "My parents taught me at an early age that saying something nasty and then just saying, 'just kidding,' was a no-no. I've got a memory of my sore butt to prove it."
Good point.
So let's see. "Palladino basically calls President Obama," says John, "a lazy N-word, and then calls First Lady Michelle Obama a monkey while simultaneously denigrating trans people. And that's somehow supposed to be funny? Pardon me while I go throw up."
Yeah.
You know, there was that aspect of it, too, and that was, very disturbing.
Yes.
Steve says, "It's not a mouthwash retribution. It's a way of thinking and of seeing the world that has outlived its useful shelf life and is and its past is, quote, best consumed by date of generations. A slap on the wrist does not teach the big lesson opportunities here. Let's not play nice to this foul excrement. Another Trump legacy, says Deborah. Cuomo won't give State of the State in Albany Convention Center, but at 6 regional speeches. Only friendly audiences welcome. Deborah.
That's right. That's a good point.
Rosemary, you're great, but
is that Alan or a letter writer?
No, this is just here. Look.
Okay.
It's in print.
Okay.
Yeah.
Must be true.
Okay,
though.
Let me read that again. Rosemary, you're great, but there's no way Obama could have shown passion as president. Racism would have rendered any loss of cool as showing Obama to be unfit for the office. He'd never have been reelected. He's probably have been impeached after the 2010 midterms. That Obama held it together is one of the wonders of his presidency. So now let me go first. I think, Luke, that I don't agree with you because I did think he did show passion. And he showed passion by the kinds of things that he did when he was in office. He had guts. He did what was right. That's passionate. It's not yelling or tweeting. It's just substantively.
His problem is the same as Hillary, who also, for the same reason, because she was a woman and couldn't come off as emotional, came off as a bad candidate, wooden, and she's not a very great public speaker. In politics, you have to have a variety of skills, and one of them is to speak to the audience. And Trump has that in spades.
Trump has that, but also, I mean, Obama certainly had that. I mean, he could go out and really could wow a crowd.
He could.
Just think of his 2008 crowds, and you know, it was epic.
Well, and I think of the speeches that he's given during his presidency on race, the speeches that he gave following Columbine. I thought there was great passion in those speeches.
Anyway, Deborah wrote and said, pay raise. Alan, perhaps you might mention no pay raise in 18 years, and most don't have outside income. Maybe people don't like legislators, but compensation shouldn't be linked to substance. Reeks of extortion, says Deborah. Okay, so I have a couple of things to say about that. Number one, in a recent poll, New Yorkers don't want to give the legislature a raise, and by huge margins. Number two, extortion. It's the way it's always been done. People make political deals. That's how come we have charter schools in New York State. George Pataki traded the legislature, and everybody knew it, charter schools for a pay raise. And that's the last time that they got one.
1999, right?
I think you're right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the last pay raise, I mean.
And it says here, most don't have outside income. And that's the most interesting thing in the letter. I think I know who the letter's from. Here's the point. Let's say you're a legislator. Let's say you're a legislator, Deborah, in writing to us. Most legislators don't have outside income, and yet they support John J. Flanagan. They support Boss Hastie when those guys represent the people who do have outside income. So don't you see, as Festus would say? It's on you.
Everyone is nodding.
We're nodding
for those in the radio audience. Let me move on to a couple of other topics that I want to get to in our final last 15 minutes or so. One is the Jason Miller story. This is an interesting story. You will note that the aide Jason Miller was named as White House Communications Manager, right? What was the official
Director.
Title? Director, thank you. And then 2 days later said he was not going to take the job. He was, right, he was the choice for Communications Director. He said he was not going to take the job and said that he wanted to spend more time with his family. And the question is...
That's almost
kind
of funny.
Yeah.
Right. So then there are questions as to exactly what happened. And which is sort of not even really been overly reported, is the fact that Sean Spicer, who was named White House Press Secretary
yeah.
will take over.
He's going to do both jobs.
And we'll do both jobs. So we
until
get
they find
the price of one.
Until they find somebody else.
Right.
Is this Jason Miller guy? Is he the one who said there'll be taco trucks on every corner? Is that him?
I don't know. I can check.
Okay. Well, while we're checking, what's interesting to me here is, and it's not the first time, it's when one person in the Trump transition team calls out and criticizes another who's being considered, or in this case, actually named to a position in the Trump administration. You saw it with Kellyanne Conway submarining any chance, if there was any chance, of Mitt Romney becoming Secretary of State. She just lashed out publicly that it's outrageous that he would.
But it's hard to believe, Mike, that wasn't planned.
That wasn't planned.
Somebody put those words into her mouth and said, "Go get him."
Yeah. Well, in that case, I think you make a good point. In this particular case, the person who did it, Delgado, her name was A.J. Delgado.
She was fascinating. She is the blonde Hispanic spokeswoman. She was one of the Trumpettes, but she was, you know, also blonde, but she was Hispanic.
Right, but she has now resigned, I understand.
That's interesting.
I think that's...
She was pretty effective as
I mean, she sort of took him out, and then she's sort of getting out of the way.
Well, it's interesting, because if you read the tweets, it sounds like basically he had a child out of wedlock with someone not his
wife.
Or
something, yeah.
And so it's hard for me to believe that is such an egregious fault in the Trump White House that he can't have the job. It's not as bad as some of the stuff Trump has done.
Right. Let me correct that. I don't know that she's resigned. She's deactivated her Twitter account, which in the communications business these days is almost the same.
And maybe Rosemary's surmise is right and maybe wrong. We want to be very careful here that we don't say, you know, he had a child out of wedlock if we don't really know that.
I didn't say that. I said the Twitter sent out by Delgado made that sound. She called him the baby.
I see. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. The baby daddy.
That's what she said.
Yes.
Okay. The other story I want to get to, and I found this, and I'm sure this is also a Media Project story as well, but very interesting story in the New York Times about fake news. And wielding claims of fake news, conservatives take aim at mainstream media. I'll just read a line or two from this article and kind of set it up. But the CIA, the FBI, and the White House may all agree that Russia was behind the hacking that interfered with the election, but there was no import to the website Breitbart News, which dismissed reports on the intelligence assessment as left-wing fake news. Rush Limbaugh has diagnosed a more fundamental problem. The fake news is the everyday news in the mainstream media, he said on his radio show recently. They just make it up. Some supporters of President-elect Donald Trump have also taken up the call. As reporters were walking out of a Trump rally this month in Orlando, a man heckled them with shouts of fake news. Until now, that term had been widely understood to refer to fabricated news accounts that are meant to spread virally online. But conservative cable and radio personalities, top Republicans, and even the president-elect himself, incredulous about suggestions that fake stories may have helped swing the election, have appropriated the term and turned it against any news that they see as hostile to their agendas.
That's right. What else is there to say?
That's right.
That's exactly what they're doing. You know, black is white, white is black, up is down, down is up. And if you understand anything about propaganda, you know, if you say it enough times, somebody's going to salute.
The line in there that I think is the most true and scary is that the aim of fake news is not to make you think a fake story as false, but to make you distrust all news. And that is what is happening. And our business is all about credibility. That is the number one job of any media outlet, is to protect and
to fact check, to promote
its credibility. Yeah. And instead now there's nothing. The Trump speakers are saying, there's no such thing as fact anymore. People can believe what they want. No, you can't believe something. You can believe something is not true, but that doesn't make it not true. And we're going to find it with climate. We're going to find it with politics. And so what do you use as proof anymore? What do we use as proof?
Well, I think what this effort, you know, that the alt-right is making is allowing people to just look around and find the news that they like and that they agree with and embrace that, whether there's any authority to it, whether there's any documentation, whether there's any legitimate attribution to it. And that does exactly what you said. It undermines all news.
Right.
It basically makes, I think it's good to question everything. It's good to be skeptical, but it's also important to be able to discern between a story that has very little attribution and questionable attribution from a questionable source that doesn't have a reputation versus looking at a legitimate established news source, looking at the attribution and being able to judge, I don't like this, this is odd, I'm going to go do a little more research and see if others are reporting this, and kind of making thoughtful decisions. And this undermines all of that.
Right. That thoughtful decision on a story-by-story basis is very different than what Rush Limbaugh is saying, which is the fake news is the everyday news in the mainstream media.
Yeah,
they just make it up. And it's not just one story, it's everything that they report. That's
which is
scary.
Everything I don't like.
Right.
Yeah. That throughout the election on social networks, I'd be talking to high school friends who are all Trump supporters, and they would say something really outrageous. And I go, that's just not true. Well, how do you know that? Well, here's a story from the Washington Post. Here's another from the LA Times. Don't quote those to me. I go, well, just exactly who do I quote to you then? What is the proof? How do you fact check, if anything, that supports the point of view or the fact that you're trying to illustrate is suspect in itself?
Well, there's a couple of good websites that I turn to during the election. You know, Snopes is one.
No, they're Canadian. You can't trust them,
according to my high school friends.
Right,
but there's other fact checkers, you know, the Washington Post. And
the Washington Post, that's mainstream media. Please, I have heard all of this. I suspect you and I do use the same
obviously
machinery
we're part
there
of that.
To that. But we're part of the conspiracy.
Right, but what they generally do is these websites is they analyze where the, you know, thread came from, and they talk about how it became this, and they follow the progression. And it's very useful in understanding how one suggestion or one offhand comment by somebody suddenly becomes the story when there's nothing to back it up. It's
right.
Really troubling.
But why bother us with the facts? Alan.
I just wanted to say something. We talked earlier about you in the supermarket and me in the street. I just want everybody to know that we, all of us, have been extraordinarily gratified by all those people who walk up to us and say things to us like, thank you for what you're doing. Never go further than that, but thank you for what you're doing, you know, at this time. And we very much appreciate that. I didn't want people to feel that that wasn't what we were getting, but overwhelmingly, it is what we're getting.
Yes.
I like the Christmas cards, too.
Do you want another letter or not?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a few moments.
Okay, here we go. As a Democrat, I wish I could give higher marks to Obama, but a disproportionate analysis of his 8 years leads me to more critical conclusions. He did a lot, but he did not do enough.
Right.
He was stymied by his own political timidity. He hemmed and he hawed like, in professor-like fashion way too much. When bolder leadership was called for, he channeled his inner Adlai Stevenson too much when it was Harry Truman the country needed him to channel. I only have one thing to say about that. I remember going to the Riverside Theater at 96th Street and Broadway and sitting in the children's section, and they played the news. And on came Harry Truman, and everybody in the theater booed Harry Truman. And, you know, I mean, he was a guy who believed in what he said. He said it a lot. He fired General MacArthur, a good idea. But people weren't his fans. I don't know that he could have won another term in office.
Best wouldn't let him run.
What'd you say?
His wife wouldn't let him run. Back to Missouri.
That's where they went. Great favorite of mine.
We should, in our last 2 minutes, mention the other story that, of course, made news this weekend was the death of George Michael. His record sale, it was 100 million albums or something like that. It was just an unbelievable number. And had a troubled life, and yet had great success, especially in the 80s, not only with the group Wham, but then when he went solo and had just amazing sales. And even in more recent times when he would just go out and tour
big
solo,
crowds. Yep.
Unbelievable, yep. And would sell out arenas in seconds. Yep.
sometimes mistaken in public, even in death, with Boy George. But
right.
Really talented guy and incredibly generous, too, as it turns out. He did that charity thing the way it's supposed to be done, anonymously, and gave to causes, especially gay rights and HIV
AIDS.
Prevention. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's a word on what the cause of death was. He died in
heart
failure. Heart
failure,
is what the manager said.
But he used drugs for forever, and so that it may,
he was 53.
Maybe something.
It
was very young to die of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He lost a partner to HIV in the days before, you know, the cocktails.
What's your favorite Wham or George Michael tune?
Faith.
Yeah, I love Faith. That's an absolutely beautiful song. I played that endlessly in a loop in bad times of my life.
And the same goes for the Christmas song.
The Last Christmas.
Yeah, The Last Christmas. Yeah,
and Before You Go-Go.
It's an earring kind of song, but it's a great song.
I like Before You Go-Go, too.
Wake me up before you go-go.
Go-go.
Just
and
a lot
Alan,
of,
what
lot
do
of
you
happiness.
Think of this?
Very, very sad.
have you heard of him before he died?
Point him out in a lineup.
You certainly have nothing to object to this.
Who's better, Tony Bennett or
No, don't even start that. I think it's a sad story. I think what also, there's the cumulative effect, which... many people are saying, and I'm certainly not original in this, but pointing it out, which is that 2016 has been quite a year for losing obviously Prince and David Bowie, once I start, I'll obviously leave somebody out, but and not even just that, but Muhammad Ali and others. So it's been a rough year. Well, we will end there for the morning, and we will
predict more deaths in 2017.
Thank you, Rosemary. I think that's a solid, probably a solid bet, right?
And more taxes.
Part of life.
Yeah, death and taxes. That's right. we'll be back tomorrow with another rundown of what's happening in the world, and we'll welcome you to join us in that. In the meantime, we'll continue with today's edition of the Roundtable after this.